This is WBAA. I'm Betty Carson. Nick Schinkel, the director of the West Lafayette Public Library, reviews Ashfall by Indiana author Mike Mullen. The book starts with a quote by Will Durant, quote, "Civilization exists by geological consent, subject to change without notice," unquote. Many visitors to Yellowstone National Park don't realize that the boiling hot springs and spraying geysers are caused by an underlying supervolcano. It has erupted three times in the last 2.1 million years, and it will erupt again, changing the Earth forever. This is where Mike Mullen begins his tale, The Friday That Changes the World We Currently Inhabit. Nick Schinkel begins his review by reading from the book.
I was home alone on that Friday evening. Those who survived know exactly which Friday I mean. Everyone remembers where they were and what they were doing, in the same way my parents remembered 9/11, but more so. Together we lost the old world, slipping from that cocoon of mechanized comfort into the hellish land we inhabit now. The pre-Friday world of school, cell phones, and refrigerators dissolved into this post-Friday world of ash, darkness, and hunger. The sound hit me physically like an unexpected gust of wind trying to throw me off my feet. Two windows in the house next door bowed inward under the pressure and shattered. Darren stumbled from the force, and I caught him with my left hand. I used to watch lightning storms with my sister. We'd see the lightning and start counting one Mississippi, two Mississippi. If we got to five, the lightning was a mile away. 10, 2 miles. This noise was like when we'd see the lightning, count one and wham! The thunder would roll over us, the kind of thunder that would make my sister run inside screaming. But unlike thunder, this didn't stop. It went on and on, machine gun style, as if Zeus had loaded his bolts into an M60 with an inexhaustible ammo crate. But there was no lightning, only thunder. I glanced around. The firefighters were running for their truck and the knot of rubberneckers had scattered. The sky was clear. I could barely make out a couple of columns of smoke in the distance, but this had been there for an hour or more. Nothing obvious was wrong, except for the god-awful noise. Blackness. It was so dark I couldn't see my hand held in front of my face. I'd expected the bathroom to be dark since it was an interior room. But last night I'd been able to see fine in the bedroom. The three huge windows let in plenty of light. Even if it was still nighttime, I should have been able to see something. The darkest overcast night I'd ever been in hadn't been this black. Back in the master bedroom, I handed the flashlight to Darren and mouthed thanks at him. He and Joe walked to a window on the other side of the room and pointed the flashlight at the glass. The beam died not far outside, snuffed out by a thick rain of light gray dust falling slowly in a dense sheet that blacked out all light. Little drifts of dust clung to the muntins dividing the window panes. I tapped the glass, and a bunch of the stuff sloughed off and drifted down, joining the main flow, raining down unceasingly. I stared out the window, trying to figure out what the falling stuff was. It was light gray, like ash from an old fire, but a lot finer, sort of like the powder for athlete's foot. I leaned closer to the window, trying to get a better look. What I got instead was a smell, the stench of rotten eggs. The unthinkable has happened. As our book opens, the ancient volcano at Yellowstone Park in Wyoming has erupted, kickstarting a true horror story complete with massive rains of ash, thunderous noise that never seems to end, and resulting pitch blackness. Enter 15-year-old Alex, a typical teenager, if we have such in this country. He argues with his parents and his younger sibling, loves to play World of Warcraft, has had his share of bullying at school, and daydreams about girls. This young man is now faced with his world turned upside down. Ashfall is part coming-of-age story, big part adventure story, taking us on a peril-filled journey of discovery. Soon after we meet him, 15-year-old Alex finds himself alone and in imminent danger of being burned alive in his home after the Yellowstone volcano explodes in the big one. Barely escaping his burning house, the volcano's eruption has sent burning rocks this far away into Iowa. Mike is taken in by his neighbors, as we just heard. But as the ash from the volcano soon shrouds everywhere west of the Mississippi in darkness, and the noise of the erupting volcano drowns out all sound, lawlessness descends on the land soon after, and Mike finds himself in the midst of a gun battle that he and his neighbors barely survive. Mike decides that waiting in Cedar Falls, Iowa, for the return of his family from now far away Illinois is not likely to come out well, given the ever-falling ash and constant booming thunder. And so he sets out on an epic journey, by ski and by foot. The rain of ash has rendered every other form of transportation unusable. And of course, it has destroyed the electric and other power grids as well. His effort is to reach the mighty Mississippi River and cross it somehow to reunite with his family in Illinois. What began for Alex as a long-awaited home alone weekend turns into a journey through twilight fields of foot-sucking gray ash and lawlessness not experienced in these parts in centuries. I crawled to the edge of my hidey hole and peeked out. Someone was rummaging through the front part of the gas station, picking up chunks of debris and tossing them aside. I slunk backward into the wreckage and packed up quickly, wincing every time I made a sound. When I emerged from the hole, I crouched behind a twisted metal roof panel, hoping to watch for a while without being seen. A man and a woman were going through the rubble at the front of the store, sifting ash and moving bits of the wreckage. Behind them, two kids, maybe 4 or 5, the other a bit older, sat on a warped piece of plywood. A rope was tied to the upturned edge of the board, turning it into an improvised sled. A pair of duffel bags rested on the board beside the kids. I tried to clip into my skis and get ready to move without exposing myself, but it was almost impossible to put skis on while crouching. "Hello?" the guy called. "Someone there?" I stood up. "Hi?" The guy looked at me, and I saw his eyes scan right and left. "You alone?" "Yeah," I said, although the question made me wonder why he wanted to know. The woman kept poking through the rubble, ignoring us. "You find any food here?" "Only a handful of candy." "You got any food?" "No." "You don't look hungry," he said, starting to slog through the ash toward me. My heart dropped in my chest. I was hungry, tired, and sore from all the skiing. The last thing I wanted was a confrontation with this guy. I sidestepped on my skis, making sure I had a clear path to push forward or back. I stared at the guy, but said nothing. "My family and I, we were on our way to Nebraska when it hit. We only had some snacks with us. We've had barely any food for a week." "That's rough." I tried to sound sympathetic, but I kept my eyes wide open and took a stronger grip on my staff. He was coming on strong, moving toward me as fast as the ash and wreckage would allow. "That's a full backpack you're wearing. There's food in there. I can smell it." "I don't have any food." "Leave him alone, Daryl. He's only a kid," the woman yelled. I wished people would quit calling me a kid, although if it convinced Daryl to back off, I'd take it. "Shut up, Mabel. We need food." I thought about trying to run. I wasn't sure I could get my skis turned and get moving fast enough to get away. Then I considered the mechanics of fighting on skis while holding a staff and ski pole. Not good. I jammed the ski pole upward through my belt and hoped it would stay put. The arrow was getting close, too close. I took the staff in a two-handed grip like a 6-foot baseball bat and started whirling it over my head. Master Parker would have scolded me if she'd seen my form. You're supposed to step into each swing so your body spins with the staff, but I'd like to see her do it right while wearing skis. Darrow was either dumb, desperate, or both. He kept coming. The end of the staff was probably going 100 miles an hour. If I hit him with it square, he wouldn't get up. Ever. One of the kids on the makeshift sled started crying. I swung the staff into the piece of corrugated roofing I'd been hiding behind. Smack! The metal made an echoey, booming sound like reverb on an electric guitar. Darrow stopped. "I don't have any food," I bellowed. "Leave me alone." "Daryl T. Jenkins, get your butt back here right this instant and help me search," Mabel screeched. I slid slowly backward on the skis and whirled the staff over my head again. Daryl glared at me, a hateful stare, and he slowly turned toward Mabel. I spun and pushed off, skiing as fast as I could to put some distance between us. When I looked back at the family, Daryl and Mabel were bickering as they searched the rubble. Both kids were crying. As he makes his slow journey across the new desolation of Ashen, Iowa, Mike comes across big-hearted Midwesterners who invite him into their homes to share what little food and water they have, and runs as best as he can from timid farmers who point shotguns at him from darkened windows. He is threatened with imminent danger by bloodthirsty jailhouse escapees. And note, Alex once again shows a real kick-butt attitude when faced with peril, drawing upon and using his taekwondo skills, as we just heard. And then, just when we wonder whether anything is going to turn out okay for this guy, Alex finds himself rescued from bleeding to death after one of these more mismatched bouts by a tough-willed young woman, Darla, who, like Mike, is lost and all but alone in this twilight world of hazy yellow sky and foot-deep ashfall. Given time to convalesce with Darla and her mother's care, Mike and Darla soon enough hastened to escape the burning farmstead where Darla had been crafting a post-eruption life with her now-murdered farmstead mother. They head eastwards towards what their radio had faintly said was a federal web of refugee camps newly erected in Trans-Mississippi, Illinois, and Kentucky. Mind you, our story could have veered off track here and focused on the Alex-Darla romance. But instead, author Mike Mullen maintains his commitment to real-life narrating. Ashfall does not become a soppy, love-grows-from-hardship teen romance, with only each other to depend upon as they travel slowly towards the Mississippi River and thence, they hope, into Illinois. Both Alex and Darla take their good, sweet time acknowledging their affection for each other. Like so much else that happens or doesn't happen in Ashfall, this is romance the way it really happens in life. We join Darla and Mike now in one of those early moments of pleasure that they have as they are traveling through this world of ash. Things are still somewhat lighthearted as we join them, and we read this. Mike speaks. "We must have been quite a sight. Two gray-white ghosts sailing down the rest of the hill on one pair of skis, cackling maniacally and trailing a plume of ash in our wake. The rest of our way into Worthington, Darla rode on the back of my skis whenever there was a downhill slope steep enough, which wasn't often. It was more than nice feeling her back there, her hands clinging to my chest, although it made the skis harder to control. I hoped for more steep slopes, but most of the way was flat or gently sloped. I kept my pace on the flat parts so we could travel side by side and talk. We chatted about nothing in particular, mostly life before the volcano. I wished this or something like it could go on forever. Darla at my side, talking about nothing much and occasionally hugging me as we sailed down a hill." Well, I had the privilege of hearing author Mike Mullen speak about his book at a special author visit to the West Lafayette Public Library earlier this winter, and he told us that the events which take place in Ashfall are based on possibilities, real possibilities. No one really knows what will happen when the Yellowstone volcano actually explodes, but these are plausible, he told us, based on research he did about other major volcanic eruptions throughout recorded history. The story of ancient Mount Vesuvius and the twin cities of Pompeii and Herculaneum certainly come to mind as you read through this story. Written with a young adult audience in mind, Ashfall gripped my attention, too. Indeed, The Hunger Games, that uber-popular book and now movie that is sweeping the nation, have nothing on this one. As another reviewer wrote of Ashfall, quote, "This is an intelligent, thought-provoking, and most importantly, incredibly fun book, a fast-paced post-apocalyptic adventure. It's a read in one frenzied gulp and then go back and reread kind of novel. This book is a great beginning, and I'm looking forward to the rest of the trilogy," end quote. I can't say it better myself. If you're looking for a novel that'll make you think and experience all kinds of emotions, from fear to joy to happiness to sorrow, Ashfall by Mike Mullen is your kind of book. It's available at all of our fine local libraries, including, of course, the West Lafayette Public Library.
That was Nick Schinkel, the director of the West Lafayette Public Library. He's reviewed Ashfall by Indiana author Mike Mullen.